Blog Talk Radio.
A licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro, providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. ManaPro, nurturing life. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer. My co-host is poultry advocate and author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles, Pat Foreman. Today is Thursday, April 28th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. You can follow the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show 24 hours a day at our website, chickenwhisperer.com. That's chickenwhisperer.com. From there, you can follow us on Twitter, become a fan on Facebook, visit our blog, sign up for our monthly e-newsletter, The Chicken Scratch, and get all kinds of great Chicken Whisperer gear. If you're listening live today on Blog Talk Radio, I invite you to join us in the live chicken chat room that's going on right now. Ever so popular. You can talk with other backyard poultry with the Chicken Whisperer fans and other chicken owners from around the country. You can also ask any questions you may have for our special guest when we have them on. All you have to do is click on the Chat Now button at our homepage there at Blog Talk Radio. Take a moment to register. That will get you your own unique, fun, and creative screen name. Then you can come on in, sit a spell, have a great time, meet some new friends, talk all about our passion, hobby, and lifestyle of backyard poultry, show poultry, sustainable living, urban farming, urban gardening, and anything else that might just tickle your fancy. I would also like to invite you to mark this radio show as a favorite and request to be on our friends list while you're there at Blog Talk Radio. We hope you'll take a moment to do this today. And again, I want to thank you all for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro.
ManaPro is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product, you can be certain that ManaPro cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life.
If you have experienced the disappointment of broken or weak eggshells, try ManaPro's Oyster Shell. Adding oyster shell to your flock's feeding program helps provide the calcium they need for strong eggshells. So don't let those beautiful eggs go to waste. Try ManaPro's Oyster Shell for your pullets and layers.
You've ordered your new baby chicks and even have the brooder prepared, but now it's time to order that new chicken coop. My Amish Goods offers quality-built chicken coops for every size flock and budget. They have many styles and colors to choose from and will ship them fully assembled right to your front door. Act now and receive a special upgrade at no additional charge. Visit them online at myamishgoods.com. That's myamishgoods.com. Looking for something? Find it online at Bidbird Auctions. Bidbird.com is an online auction service that caters specifically to the poultry, waterfowl, game bird, and pigeon hobbyists. With so many rare and exciting species listed daily and in a wide variety of categories, you'll want to visit often. Join hundreds of the nation's top breeders that have made Bidbird Auctions their new home. And get sold on Bidbird.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com. Hey ladies, do you have a hard time finding the perfect gift for that animal lover on your list? I did, but not anymore. I shop at HobbyHillFarm.com. They have a great selection of dog, cat, horse, and chicken gifts that are not only cute, but affordable too. Check them out at HobbyHillFarm.com and become a Facebook fan at Facebook.com/HobbyHillFarm to receive updates on new products and special discounts. I just know you're going to love HobbyHillFarm.com. I do.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It's Thursday, which means we've got one more day until Friday, Fun Friday. And, of course, it couldn't be a radio show without introducing my one co-host, poultry advocate and author. Every now and then she's known to hit the coffee pot. Pat Foreman!
Hit the coffee pot by half a cup a week. I don't know. I already had my half a cup yesterday, Whisper, but that storm last night just kept me up all night. I'm about ready for another quarter cup maybe today just to get me through. My Lord, what wind and storms we had. And I know you really got slammed down there, too. It's amazing.
We were actually in the eye of the needle because it basically, like a railroad track, went above us, went below us. And we had some wind. I saw lightning in the distance and maybe just, a trace of rain, a trace, hardly at all. That was it. And we were getting ready to bunker down, that's for sure. I kept real close watch to the Doppler radar on the computers, and it we were very, very lucky. Now, my personal assistant, Christina Duncan, also known as Love for Poultry, in the chat room, she is fine. Apparently, what I've heard, talked to her this morning, no damage at her homestead. But the town that she lives in, she lives on the outskirts of town, but right there at the exit off of I-75 at Ringgold was one of the worst hit. I mean, it's up there with, I know that Tuscaloosa, Alabama, right now, from what I understand, maybe the worst hit town all through this whole storm process. But Ringgold may rank there as number two because it was just horrible. I think a two or three story hotel collapsed. Last night I was on Facebook watching the local Chattanooga and Georgia news agencies post, and at one point it got very grim. The Ringgold police were calling for a mobile morgue to come and set up. So it was that was kind of ominous and really, really, really bad. And we've had our share, seems like about every 7 to 10 days are just rolling through from the west and just plummeting in with rain and storms and wind and lightning. A good friend, in fact, she's gotten chickens from me, Jerry, I'm trying to think of her last name. She had neighbors that lost their lives just down in South Atlanta. So it was not fun. And so if you're is it still moving up through your way, Pat? Because, you know, we're leaving for Virginia here in just a few hours, coming up 85, and I think we'll be on the tail end of it. I don't think we're going to hit anything that late. But what's it like there now?
Well, it's windy, it's kind of gusty, but the sun's shining and things are greening up. The grass needs mowing like crazy. So it's I think there was fertilizer in all that rain because of what I mowed 2 days ago is just back to where it was. But I don't think you'll have any trouble, Whisper. You'll just zoom right on up. You'll probably have a tailwind that'll put you here hours ahead of time. Whisper, are you there? I wonder if he just lost communications. In the chat room, can you guys hear me in the chat room? Am I still coming through okay? Oh, maybe we're all off. Okay, I'm still connected, but... okay. Okay, can anyone out there hear me? Okay, you can hear me. Okay, but you don't hear Whisper, I assume. Andy's not online. Okay, very good. Well, I'll just do a little monologue here for a little bit. But one of the things when I was up most of the night, it seemed, with this wind, and for the first time, I've lived in this house now going on, 12 years, but for the first time, I decided to go downstairs to sleep because I had visions of the roof blowing off, and I guess that did happen to some neighbors down a little bit further south. It was pretty scary, so I did go downstairs darn, even down there, I have a little couch, and I could see the wind was blowing, and the window panes on the glass were getting pushed in. And then I thought, oh, my God, what if they break? So I put the blinds down and just kind of dozed off and off all sleep. Dozed on and off all night pretty much. But I've got two little mixed terrier dogs, and they were just plastered to me pretty much. They didn't like that storm one iota. And I think it's kind of hard on some of the pets and the dogs because they do get upset, some of them, by the storms. So anyway, I guess it's affecting the whole East Coast. And my goodness, these storms, the changing weather patterns, I just keep thinking, you know, no matter if you believe in global warming or not, we are having changing weather patterns. And all the more better reason to keep a family flock. Because if those food lines go, for whatever reason, whether it's an earthquake or storms or flooding, whatever, if you've got some chickens, you'll still have eggs. And if worst comes to worst, that chicken dinner. But we hope it doesn't necessarily come to that. So, yeah, everything here is okay. My chickens made it through the night. They didn't miss a beat. I don't think they even woke up, and my official count on the little chicks that hatched out, I have 7, and this was one of the lowest hatches I've ever had. And I was kind of thinking back what might have affected it. I'd set 22 eggs to be able to hatch out under 2 broody hens, and then candled them at 10 days, and at that point, seven of them were infertile, so I called those out and then put them under the hens. And I don't know if it was because other hens were shuffling in and out with this one nest where it was a floor nest, or if the humidity wasn't right in the incubator or quite what, but ended up just with 7, which is 1/3 hatch rate, which is rather low. We used to get 80-90% hatch rate when we had sometimes even higher when we had the farm. So anyway, they're all doing so cute. I gave them some little hard-boiled eggs this morning. They were so happy, and the mother hens were happy to say, eat this. This is high protein. This will make you grow big and strong. So that's the latest news on the little chicks, and they're eating, they're drinking well. I'm keeping them in this little mini barn brooder. They're kind of free range just until they can get so they can hop up and down at least a few inches, and then I'll start to let them out on the grass. And Whisper, I see in the chat room, says you're back.
I'm back.
We had a little meltdown. Okay, welcome back.
Yep, had a little meltdown here. Just want to say a personal thank you to Microsoft for that. I really want to say from the bottom of my heart, thank you so much, Microsoft. I really appreciate that. You are the bomb. So, okay, now we are back. No problem. Now that I've got that thank you out of the way.
What gets me are these little pop-up windows that come up even during formal presentations. I've seen them come up with it. I just can't believe they let that happen. And there must be a way to turn them off. It's just I'm a Mac person myself, so I don't have that problem. Anyway, we're good. Are you going to be on video today since you just got a haircut and you got all spiffed up for your trip coming up?
I did. Tater Farm says, oh, I see you, CW. And I'm wondering how I put see me because we haven't launched the Oh, okay, I see what I'm typing. Gotcha. Okay, it's like, what, where? Where do you see me? I mean, it kind of had me, I was like, you know, I mean, I expect that, you know, maybe from the feds, you know, hiding cameras and tapping our phones and whatnot, but not Tater Farm, I mean, surely. So, So, no, I don't think we'll do video today. I is up and out early. Again, we're traveling and want to invite everybody to come on up and see Pat and I at the Augusta Co-op there in Staunton, Virginia. We are heading out this afternoon and taking the show on the road again. As you know, we have the Chicken Whisperer Tour. We go all over the place, and this will, however, be the last long distance, I would call this, tour or stop until about August 23rd. I do have an event August 23rd with ManaPro over in South Carolina. That is on the books, but for the next 3 months with the move and the baby and the selling of the house and all this, renovations and all that. So we may do some local events here if asked, if they work with our schedule. But this will be the last long event, and we're heading up to the Augusta Co-op there in Staunton, Virginia, and can't wait. We love doing events. We love to meet you guys, our listeners, our fans. Really fun time. It's going to be this Saturday, and we're going to be broadcasting the radio show live from, and the timetable is still to be announced. It'll either be like a 9:30 to 10:30, or maybe a 10 to 11, and maybe even a 9 to 10, because they've got the stage, if you will, or the podium. They have a couple of guest speakers. It's going to be a huge event. It's a big spring fling, and they rented this huge, like, 80 by 100 tent outside of their store. They're going to have, like, a horse whisperer, I guess, or a horse expert there. They're going to have lots of vendors there. It's just going to be huge. A lot of just a fun time. And so we'll be set up under the tent to do the radio show, but also under the tent there's a little speaking area with chairs set up and whatnot in the audience, where we'll be able to do the one and a half to two hour poultry workshop. And Walter wants to know when I'm coming up there to the Northeast. As soon as you have that title transferred over for that blazer, as soon as you have the title transferred over, we'll be probably making a trip up to the Northeast. So absolutely. So we're heading that way. Always love to get on the road and meet our friends and fans, and we may even, it may be even in the cards to stop by your place, Pat. We'll just have to see what the cards hold. If not, then of course we'll be meeting at the co-op up there. Looking forward to that. So I'll post some more information about that on our Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer. Alrighty, so we're running a little bit behind because of Microsoft. Thanks a lot, buddy. We're going to go ahead and get into Chickens in the News segment, because we've got a great show lined up for everybody today. Richard Frudenberger is going to be here talking about backyard aquaponics, and with all the rain we've gotten lately, I think we all probably right now have backyard aquaponics. But you never know. So he's going to tell us what that means, how in depth it is, how simple it can be, and the goals, and why you may want to be or get into backyard aquaponics. So that's today. Tomorrow, of course, I'm not sure we're going to be broadcasting from. We'll be broadcasting. I may let Jen drive the SUV. I may broadcast from the passenger seat, riding up 81, for all I know, depending on our service. So we'll just have to see when and where we broadcast the radio show tomorrow. It's very important, because tomorrow we're giving away a chicken coop. Yes, we are, from critter-cages.com. Many of you have we're in Atlanta. And Ralph was asking, where are you, Andy? There, Atlanta. And we got to give that coop away. And today will be the 20th password. If you go back and count, you should have 20 secret passwords. We posted them on our Facebook page. We've announced them during the radio shows. And we'll have one, of course, today. And then tomorrow, we'll pick a caller, if you're the right caller, and can recite all 20 passwords, then you're going to win that beautiful chicken coop, valued at about $400 plus shipping right to your location, some assembly required. But and that's from our good friends over at critter-cages.com. So we've got that going on tomorrow. It's going to be a fun time. And, of course, tune in Saturday. A lot of times we have a lot of regulars listen on Saturday, but we have a lot of new people in the chat room that also listen on Saturday, because they may have to work during the week. Their computers at work won't let them tune in Maybe they listen to the archive during the week, but on Saturday they can listen live. So we invite you to do so this coming Saturday. And it'll be maybe the first time that over in a couple of years that Pat and I have broadcasted at the same location. So what that means is I've got to run out after the show and get another microphone set up for our mixer, and hopefully that will work. Well, you'll hear us both one way or the other, even if Pat has to call in. But we're going to try to do it the right way, so we'll see if that works. Somebody in the chat room wanted me to share also, we got another chicken coop contest going on right now, and I'll share it with you. It was requested. The Chicken Coops for Classrooms contest. Chicken Coops for Classrooms. We're very, very proud, Pat and I, to be offering this contest. It's awesome. This is the second one. We're going to try to do three a year, a fall, a winter, and a spring. And all schools in America in the lower 48 states are eligible due to shipping, and all lower 48 states. And we need you. We want you, our fans and listeners, to nominate a local public or private school. Let me explain why. I got a second. No homeschoolers, because you can have a chance to win the coop tomorrow if you have all the passwords. The purpose here is to educate the masses with all the benefits of backyard poultry and chickens themselves. So by doing that, it can be a high school, elementary school, middle school, charter school, I guess, private school, public or private school. And you nominate them. I'll tell you how to do that. But awesome, awesome prizes. Let me go through this because without our sponsors, there wouldn't be any prizes. And it's a great prize package for this Chicken Coops for Classrooms, only here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. But they're going to win a dozen fertile hatching eggs from MyPetChicken.com. Thank you, Derek and Tracy. They're going to win a beautiful incubator from Brensea.com. Beautiful incubator from Brensea.com. They're going to win a brooder kit from Critter-Cages.com. Then they're going to win a beautiful chicken coop, a chicken villa, I think it is, valued at a little over $400 from Ware Manufacturing. And you see their products on all over the pet stores and feed and seeds across America, Ware Manufacturing. And then they're going to win many books, my book, Pat's books. Christine Heinrichs is going to have some books, and maybe even some things from some ManaPro. We'll get them some Chick Starter in the 5-pound bag sent over to them. So great, huge prize package. Now, how do I nominate this school? How do I do it? Very simply. You just send us an email to contest@chickenwhisperer.net. contest@chickenwhisperer.net. Now, in that email, you need to include a few things. Number one, the school name, the school address, and the school phone number, the school's principal's name, okay, your contact information as the nominee, and then a little paragraph of why you think the school deserves this grand prize. Now, the panel will probably take in consideration schools that are already showing a desire to have a more sustainable campus, meaning do they already have a recycling program? Do they already have a healthy school lunch program? Do they already have raised bed gardens? Do they already have compost piles and bins? Do they already hatch chicks out? You know, things like that. And if they don't, it's not going to put them out of the race. Just put why you think they deserve it. We will be looking for ways the school is already going down that sustainable campus road, if you will. So that's the way to do that. Nominate your or a local public or private school for this Chicken Coops for Classrooms contest, and we're looking at contest@chickenwhisperer.net. That's the way that you can do that. And since we're talking about contests, I'll just go ahead and give you the final password. This would be password number 20, the final password for our contest, which I know Pat will love. Today's secret password is Tiller. Secret password is Tiller. So there you have it, folks. Yep, and because everybody knows how much I love to till my garden, so today's secret password is Tiller, just for you, Pat.
Oh, Whisper, you're so good to me. There are times when tilling really is appropriate, but it tends to be overdone a little bit. That's another
show.
Oh,
my goodness. I love it. I don't think we've ever had this contest where I haven't used a password as Tiller, so I had to do that for tradition. So, but Yeah, having a good time today. And let's see, just a couple more. Do you have a chickens in the news, Pat, you'd like to share? Oh, actually, Pat, share with us. We won't do chickens in the news today per se, but if you'll share with us, because we want to bring Richard on so we can talk about backyard aquaponics, but share with us about your meeting yesterday.
Yes. Well, this was really, really interesting, and it was a wonderful meeting. It was with the folks from Fibro, F-I-B-R-O, Virginia, and what they were doing is telling about the environmental benefits to the Chesapeake Bay watershed about doing incineration of poultry litter. And they had to, and what they want to do is build a poultry plant that will process, what is it? It's tons and tons, something like 465,000 tons of poultry litter a year. And then what that will do, they're saying, is it'll keep a lot of the phosphorus and the nitrogen out of the Chesapeake Bay and help water quality. And so I think this is a very good thing. They went through so many numbers and about the nitrogen and phosphorus reduction goals and how they could meet those, about the nutrient reduction analysis. And one of the things, of course, that came up that I brought up, which I'm not sure they appreciated, but was the whole issue about what happens to all the arsenic that is in the poultry litter that was fed to the chickens to help them gain weight and control, apparently, parasites. So we've got tons of arsenic that are potentially in the chicken litter. And they were very clear saying that the scrubbers will take all the arsenic, 99.999%, out of the emissions. So they were really proud of that. But then the trouble is the arsenic then ends up in the ash that then they will sell for fertilizer. And so you have basically, and there was no numbers on that, but what it boils down to is you take a bunch of poultry litter, as I understand it anyway, you incinerate it, you collect that ash, and it's very valuable fertilizer, and they can sell that. But then that also concentrates the arsenic amount, and there wasn't any kind of good answer or response for that, except that it keeps it off the field to run the Chesapeake Bay, but then it's going to go somewhere. So that's something that will probably keep coming up. And, of course, the solution would be to stop putting the Roxazone into the arsenic-containing Roxazone into chicken feed so we don't have to deal with arsenic in the environment. But they said that was a poultry industry question, and they didn't have any control over that. So I don't know. It opened the discussion. They were wonderful presenters. It was really informative, and I enjoyed it, the whole presentation. I think it's a very good thing to manage possibly manage poultry litter and get electricity out of it and then sell the ash for fertilizer. So that's making good use of waste material and recycling it back. But this pesky arsenic business just keeps popping its little head up. And anything is that is suggested to handle it or mitigate it is just trying to treat the symptom, just like in disease states, you know, where you've got a certain health problem and they try to band-aid it with just treating the symptoms without getting to the cause. So Whisper, I'm going to be in touch with them. I've got an email just about ready to go out just saying maybe they could do a premium for poultry litter that is certified not to contain the arsenic and pay the growers a little, I don't know, $5 a ton more or something that's reasonable, and then also use that as an advertising advantage, saying, you know, this ash is tested arsenic free, and won't contaminate the fields, and then that arsenic, as we know, there's some evidence that's saying that it percolates up through the food system, so as well as down in the groundwaters. So anyway, that's what it was about. It lasted about 2 hours, and there were people there from James Madison University, from Washington and Lee University, and from Virginia Military Institute, and a lot of them were the environmental engineers or the just interested people like myself. So it was pretty good. I enjoyed it. Sorry I missed yesterday's talk, however, but I was there in spirit.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for sharing that. Lots of people missed you, and I explained where you were at, and would hope that you explain that. And we know that you're on this cause, and will keep us posted throughout. So we do appreciate that. Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we got to do creative things, I think, with all these tons of poultry litter that's coming out. Some are doing composting and gathering heat underneath the compost to feed back into the poultry houses or to feed out. And, of course, incinerating, there are gas, or there's air issues, but if these scrubbers do what they claim, that'll be pretty clean emissions coming out of them. So we'll see. We'll see.
Yep. Great. Thank you. Well, it's a half past the hour. Perfect timing. We're going to go to commercial break. When we come back, we're going to welcome our good friend Richard Frudenberger, publisher and technical writer there at Back Home Magazine. And so I'm just going to forewarn you now. Go ahead and get that Chicken Whisperer notepad out, pen, paper, pencil, spiral notebook. You know, the one we always talk about here when we have our guest on. And share their awesome knowledge. And so go ahead and get that during the commercial break. Get that ready. And we'll return. We'll welcome Richard Frudenberger to the show. Stay tuned, everybody.
When you need an incubator, think Brensey, the incubation specialist. Brensey has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. You have the chickens, the coop, and the run, but do you have the egg cartons? Don't put your beautiful farm fresh eggs in any old used grocery store egg carton. Impress your friends with your very own custom labeled egg cartons from eggcartons.com. They have a large selection of custom egg cartons, stamps, and labels to choose from. Pick out your new custom egg cartons at eggcartons.com. That's eggcartons.com. First State Vet Supply is your one-stop shop to keep your birds healthy and happy. They have a wide selection of medications, vaccines, vitamins, wormers, and much more. Every product comes with specific directions and doses for your small backyard flock. Have questions about a sick or injured chicken? Take advantage of First State Vet Supply's Ask the Chicken Doctor program. For just $25, you can have a personal phone consultation with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. The consultation fee is waived if you purchase a product from First State Vet Supply. Visit them online at firststatevetsupply.com. That's firststatevetsupply.com. Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your HenSaver aprons today at HenSaver.com. That's HenSaver.com. Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
This looks like a job for
Super Chicken.
You get the super sauce. I'll don my super suit.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It is the fourth Thursday of the month, which could only mean one thing. It is, of course, Back Home Magazine Hour with Richard Krudenberger, and he is here to talk and teach us all about backyard aquaponics. So, Pat, you're back live, and yes, of course, okay. Richard, you are live as well. Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thanks. Good to be here.
Hey, Richard, welcome. Yeah.
Alrighty, yeah. I saw someone had posted on, I think, our Facebook page, laughing, and says, with all the rain we've had lately, I think we all have aquaponics in our backyard. And so, but not quite. This is, of course, a different aspect. So we are here, including myself, to learn what this is all about. I know it's more and more people are doing this, and why, and different examples, and how it can be affordable and maybe expensive, too, like everything else. So we're ready to learn.
Yeah, you know, it can be expensive, and there are quite a few large scale aquaponics outfits. But the beauty of this is that it can also be on a small scale or on a really really small scale, and that's sort of what we'll talk about is the smaller scale ones. And in case anybody isn't familiar with this, aquaponics is really sort of a permaculture approach to the raising of plants and animals in a complete closed circle cycle. So it's actually the name comes from the combination of aquaculture, which is the fish raising, and hydroponics, which is the growing of plants in a non-soil medium, basically in a what many consider a chemical basis. Water environment, but you can also do a organic hydroponics. But aquaponics is a combination of both, and the one we feature here in the magazine, the one I'm going to speak about today, is an organic approach to raising fish, and it's not just raising fish, but it's also raising plants. So we've got, you know, basically on a large scale, they build large concrete tanks or in-ground tanks like swimming pools, and then they grow plants above the tanks, but in the small scale, basically the same thing, but it's really really just a lot smaller. This gentleman who did this particular setup here, his name was Mr. Stephen Bird. He used a lot of salvage materials. I was really proud of him. His tank is about, I would say, maybe three feet in diameter and about a foot and a half deep. And it is actually a manhole. It appears to be a manhole housing, just a concrete manhole housing that he salvaged from the side of the road when they were doing some road repair work. And he noticed that they had just thrown the some broken concrete in this big round cylinder-like thing that would normally, I guess, hold the manhole cover. Well, this thing was sitting on the side of the road, and after a few days, he realized they weren't going to pick it up, and nobody was going to take it away. So he loaded it up himself, and then he took some wire and a bag or two of ready ready-mix concrete. Then he made a bottom for it, you know, just sealed it up. So he basically had a cylinder that he made a concrete bottom for, and now he had a tank. And so with this tank, which by the way could be it could be a child's swimming pool, a little wading pool. It could be a livestock a watering tank. It could be a big plastic tub. You know, I would say that probably anything smaller than 2 feet in diameter or 3 feet in diameter is probably getting a little small. But you know, basically that's not really a large tank. You know, I would say a foot or two deep and three feet across, and get up to the bigger tanks like the I've seen examples from livestock watering tanks, which, as most people realize, are those oblong black plastic or galvanized steel tanks that are usually about 5 feet long, 4 or 5 feet long, and usually about 2 feet deep, and they have that rounded lip on the top and a sealed bottom so that livestock can you know, drink their water. Well, they're available. The plastic ones especially are fairly inexpensive, or you can buy them used, and that would be a perfect size. So essentially the setup is that tank and some kind of holder for the plant containers. It could be a board, it could be some wire netting, it could be rebar or a mesh support, just something to hold the plant containers above the water container. And what happens is essentially you keep the fish in the water, and then you put the plants above the water, and you put the plants in a special medium. He's using a cocoa fiber. There's a lot of different options for that, but he's using, I believe, a cocoa fiber or some other type of coconut chips, or there's a coir soil amendment, you know, some kind of a fiber fabric that holds, just basically holds the roots of the plants firmly. And his plants are greens. I mean, he's basically growing, you know, typical lettuce and other salad green type of thing. And when you water the plants from the fish water has nutrients in it, basically the residuals from the plants and also the waste from the fish combine to make a nutrient-rich solution, like a tea. So you take the tea and you water the plants with it. It goes through the plants, through the root base of the plants, through this porous coconut fiber soil, so to speak, and it drips through the container and comes out the bottom and falls back into the tank, and then the fish can enjoy some of the nutrients from that. But you do also have to feed the fish. There's a greens duckweed is the greens. This guy is growing a duckweed plant that he feeds to the tilapia. He's raising tilapia. That's a very, very common fish for this kind of thing. And since they're omnivorous, they'll eat, you know, pretty much anything. So the plants are what they'll eat that's cheap, and he can grow that. So it's basically a cycle. I mean, he's feeding the fish with the duckweed. The fish poop into the water. The water gets enriched. The water is then used to water the plants. The plants grow. He takes the plants out to eat them. And the cycle repeats itself. And, you know, there's very, very little that can go wrong with it. I mean, there's two things that can be a problem. One is the cold weather, which he can. I'll address that in a little bit. And then the other is that there can sometimes be too much waste in the water, and that can be scooped out. That's really a matter of a learning curve. That can, if you have too many fish, you're going to either have to eat the fish, and that's the other part of the cycle too. I mean, obviously there's fish to eat. When they grow to maturity, they can be eaten. So that's a meat dish or a fish dish. And if there's too much waste from too many fish, you can scoop the waste out manually and just use it in a conventional garden, or you can eat the fish and bring down the population a little bit so there's not as much waste. And this is all a matter of learning, you know, setting up the tanks and seeing how it goes. Very inexpensive setup costs, very low-key, you know, low-maintenance schedule. I mean, it's basically, you know, in 1 day, maybe half an hour's worth of watering tour, and then just goes around until the next day. And, you know, it takes a pretty little room. It could be inside of the yard. It could be under a patio or something. I mean, obviously, there has to be some sunlight for the plants, but but that can be pretty much anywhere. I'm not so sure you want to do this in the house, but you could certainly do it in a greenhouse, an attached greenhouse, or do it in a building that has light, has adequate light, in a outbuilding, or even a garage type building that has adequate light. In which case, you may want to do this in the colder climates. You may actually want to do some of this in a building because both the plants and the fish need to be at a temperate temperature. But this particular system this man uses doesn't really have any pumps. You don't need to have pumps. It makes it easier if you do have pumps. But since he has no pumping system at all, he uses no electricity. And as I said, he just scoops a container's worth of like a watering can's worth of water out of the fish tank and waters the plants, which then that water drains through the plants and goes back into the tank. So he is losing some water every day to evaporation in the warmer months, but that's just a matter of replenishing the tank. And that's really not that much. You could go on and buy some very inexpensive pumps and some clear plastic hoses to make the cycle, get a timer. I mean, the pumps, I've seen these pumps for $9, $10, $12. Timers you can buy for probably about $15 or $16, and the hosing is really a few dollars, and you could actually set it up so you could auto water the plants on the timer every day for half an hour or so, and then it shuts off, and then you could do it again. These could be either DC or battery powered pumps, or you could buy an AC plug-in type pump if you were. Make sure you're careful not to let the pump go in, actually physically, unless it's submersible, go into the water so there's no shock hazard. But these instructions come with a pump, so that should be no real problem. But there's really no need to do that. You could actually just get your hands on down-to-earth kind of approach and just scoop a bucket full of water out there and pour it in the plants half an hour every day and repeat the cycle every day, and you'd be just fine. But, this is an excellent, excellent low-cost option for not only growing your salad greens, but also getting a little meat in your diet every once in a while. And these tilapia are very inexpensive, and they don't have to be tilapia, but that's really what most people use. And there's a variety of other kind of fish that are adequate for this kind of a operation. But, I think it's a really good approach to backyard small scale meat and salad greens kind of diet, and it's easily maintained. I mean, you don't spend a lot of time on it.
Very good. We used to just have a tub, Richard, that one of these galvanized tubs, and we grew duckweed in it for the chickens.
Yeah, and
they loved it. So it really doesn't have to be expensive or fancy. The water was, we changed the water occasionally, but it grew so fast. But it's very possible to do in your backyard.
Yeah, the duckweed. Then, if you were growing duckweed, you could feed that to the fish, and then you could also feed it to the chickens. And basically with your operation, I mean, just all you have to do is add your fish, and then you've got pretty much got it taken care of.
Yeah. And what you said, what kind of fish do you recommend? Did you say tilapia?
Yeah, tilapia is the most common. I mean, that's not the only kind of fish. There's types of carp that people raise. There's other types of fish in the tilapia family. But I think if you were to go online and look for Google, say aquaponics, and then look for fish, species to use, you'll probably find tilapia is the most the most common. If you live near a hatchery, or if you had I know we have here, we have a few of the feed and seed supplies. A couple times a year, they get deliveries of fish for stocking, and they have they have hookups for hatcheries. And we actually have a few hatcheries around here as well. But even if you have to go outside, you physically wouldn't have to go drive three states away to get your fish. I mean, you could just go to your feed and seed and see if they handle stocking type fish, and then see if they also handle something that might be in the tilapia line that they could bring in for you. And basically what you do is you pick up a small quantity of fish right there at the store there, or they could arrange for delivery if it was more. But we're not talking about that many. I mean, these tanks are not, as you said, that big. We're just talking about a small tub in some cases, and you just don't need don't need a whole lot. I mean, some of these tubs are only, what are they, only 35 gallon tubs or something like that, and you go up from there.
Yeah. They can be amazingly small, and even fish tanks. We picked up a couple of the little fish ponds, the little plastic things that you're supposed to set in the ground.
Right, the kind of people normally bury for their little decorative ponds. Is that the kind you mean?
Yeah. And it's amazing what you can grow in those. You need a pump. I mean, you have to have a pump to keep that water aerated, but they can be pretty entertaining. Trouble is, I've got to clean them occasionally. That's where I kind of fall down, just having one more thing to manage.
Yeah, it's more, I mean, it's not just for the health of the fish, but also for the, if it gets too clucky, it begins to smell. I mean, there'll be some degree of odor anyway, but it begins to get really rank. And then if you're not physically aerating the water enough, then you start to have, besides the fish aeration problems, you also start to have, could possibly have some mosquito problems too. But, if it's gotten that far, you're not doing it right. I mean, this is not a formula for raising mosquitoes. I mean, basically with, with a little submersible air bubbler pump, you'd be probably better off, because you wouldn't be having to go into the tank as frequently and just stirring things up and, getting some air in there for the fish. It'll be automatically done.
One question I just had sent to me was, how many tilapia would actually fit in a feed trough? Is there a recommended number per gallon of the feed trough?
I don't know about the feed trough, and this guy really just had like half a dozen fish or so in the small tank. So I guess you could probably do more than that in the larger tank. The best source of information for that would actually be the stocker, the fish hatchery guy, because they come in fingerling size, depending on the size of the depending on the size of the type of fish you were using, and then also depending on what you the size of the fish you actually buy. You got fry and you got the fingerling, so there's different sizes, but really you don't want to overcrowd the tank. So a very, very small tub would probably take half a dozen fish or something like that, and then you can go up from there. I don't believe it's always a geometric curve. I mean, there's certainly at some point there's just too many fish for the container, so you have to sort of manage that. But I mean, the good way to manage that is just to eat them. That's what I do.
Just eat them, yeah, or feed them to the cats. But there's another question here, Richard, from FMA Farms. He says, can aquarium fish be used? They're vegetarians, but they don't eat fish, not goldfish, angels, tetras, any of those, is the first question. And the second question is, they have a hydroponic setup. Can you convert that to aquaponics? Two good questions there.
Yeah, that's a good question. Now, as far as the fish themselves, there's no reason why you couldn't be raising. You don't have to eat the fish, so that's your decision. I mean, the main question with selection of the kind of fish you're going to use is whether they can survive in water temperatures that you'd be experiencing throughout the year in the aquaponic tank. It's certainly feasible if people wanted to do a summer-only aquaponics series, or late spring, summer, and then early fall, and maintain those temperatures at more warm levels. They could just buy fish that would survive at water temperatures of whatever that might be, 65, 75 degrees. Obviously, tropical breeds probably are not a good choice for this, because you have to be keeping the water fairly warm. And the other thing is, if you were to make a selection of warm water fish, these are all freshwater fish. If you were to make that selection, then you'd have to be careful to choose the kind of fish that would be able to exist in the winter if you were going to do it all year round. And actually, in the winter would be a situation where you'd be actually emptying the water from the tank and bringing the tank indoors, and then resetting everything up in a situation where the water, it wouldn't be a freezing kind of situation. Obviously, the water would have to be kept warmer than just above freezing, because most fish species would really want to be in an environment that was warmer than that. you know, there are some other options. Putting like greenhouse covers or cloche covers over the tanks in the cooler climate. If you weren't moving them, actually moving the tanks indoors, you could actually cover the tanks with some type of plastic or fiberglass covers or insulated covers or whatever. But if you really wanted to do a year-round operation, in a colder climate, you'd have to move the tanks inside. And you know, this has been done in barns and outbuildings as long as there's a light source. As for the second question, I really don't know why I don't understand why the or couldn't see why the hydroponics pumps and some of the distribution piping and containers and whatever couldn't be used in the aquaponics setup, because they're essentially the same thing. I mean, it really is. There's no. You've got timers, you've got pumps, you've got water delivery systems, you got water. Yeah. So that probably could be very, very adaptable to it. And I don't know. I'll be honest. I don't know if the vermiculite and the kinds of bedding material used in a hydroponic setup would be adequate for an aquaponic setup. But because all I've seen pretty much is the coconut hair, the coir kind of stuff, and chips and things like that. But I don't know why it wouldn't be. That'd be a good thing to research.
The other question is their setup is in the basement with grow lights. Any problem with that, with keeping aquaponics under grow lights in the basement?
Well, for the plants, no. I don't see why not. And for the fish, I really. I guess it would depend on the species, but that would be a good question for the hatchery source. Can these fish exist in artificial light, or would they exist? Would they do okay if we expose them to natural light in the warmer months and then just at artificial light in the cooler months? And again, some species tend to hibernate or slow down their metabolism, slows down. Substantially in the winter, so maybe that would be a kind to look at. That wouldn't really need that much light, and the water would get cooler, and they just sort of hang out through the winter months, and then come back up again in the summer. And of course, the depth of the tank would probably dictate some of that as well. Understanding that the deeper the fish like the deeper water to slow down, and the metabolism rates go down when they settle down at a deeper level.
Mm-hmm. There's another comment, Richard, that says, this is from Dragonfly Farms, they've got a 75-gallon unused fish tank. Is there any reason why they couldn't use that to grow some fish to eat?
Actually, not. I can't see why not. I just saw, I'm looking at some of these resources here, aquaponics resources and whatever, and it mentions that, yes, an unused, larger unused fish tank can be used. 75 gallons certainly is enough water. It's on the smaller... 75. It's on the smaller end of things, but it's still, that's adequate, sure.
Yeah, okay. And do you have any hatcheries that you would recommend?
Actually, not really, not by name, no. I mean, that's basically something you have to go online and look by region, just sort of see what might be available. I think just Googling aquaponics, There'd be a number of them that would come up for the source of the fish. I guess some people may be familiar with the organization ATRA. It's the National Sustainable Agricultural Information Service. That's been around a long time. Actually, has been under a couple different names, but the name that's always sort of been with it is ATTRA. This is the acronym, and they have a outreach program. They have publications, they have workshops and speakers and such, and goes out and they work with the university system and a lot of other groups to sort of help people get started and maintain agricultural sustainable agricultural techniques and practices. So the ATRA website does actually have one of the better books on aquaponics available. It's really like a manual. And that would be a good place to go. And then there's a couple of other sources, books I'm thinking of. There's one called Micro Eco Farming that deals with aquaponics, and there's another book called do-it-yourself aquaponics. And there's another book called Aquaponic Food Production. And, you know, they all have various degrees of and approaches to aquaponics, both on a larger, almost like money-making scale, and that right down to the smaller home scale and just backyard scale setups. So I think, you know, I think there's not a whole lot of information on it, and there's not a whole lot of like new information on it. A lot of the information has been around for you know a while, but it's all good information. I think as people look at food production at home in a more broad sense, in a more of a permaculture type atmosphere, they're going to realize that you know fish and aquaponics and aquaculture are all part of the agriculture package. You know, it's not just soil grown and container grown plants. We've got you've got fish and other things going on here too. So you know, it's also an excellent way for people who normally wouldn't be maybe not vegans, but for people who wouldn't be so keen on red meat diets or pork diets or even chicken diets, might be looking at fish as an option, and this would be one way to bring that right into your own backyard.
Yeah, great. Well, Richard, this is all fascinating. We're going to take a little break here now to honor our sponsors, and we're talking with Richard Frudenberger. He is the publisher and technical writer for Back Home Magazine. And when we get back, Richard, there's a question in the chat room about combining waterfowl, like ducks, with aquaponics, and if you have any comments on that. So we'll be right back. Stay tuned, and see you in just a few minutes.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer. If you're in the market for a new incubator, then look no further than GQF. They have a great selection of tabletop and cabinet-style incubators at prices you can afford. I love my GQF Genesis Model 1588. It has a large picture window and an automatic thermostat, which makes for a better hatch every time. Go pick out your new incubator at GQFradio.com. That's GQFradio.com. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry. From rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams, Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com. It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com. Since 1947, Randall Berkey has been providing quality products to their customers. They have everything you could ever want or need for backyard poultry. Feeders, waterers, medications, supplements, nesting boxes, and even coops. Visit them online at randallberkey.com and get 10% off your entire order when you use the coupon code WHISPER. That's randallberkey.com. First State Vet Supply is your one-stop shop to keep your birds healthy and happy. They have a wide selection of medications, vaccines, vitamins, wormers, and much more. Every product comes with specific directions and doses for your small backyard flock. Have questions about a sick or injured chicken? Take advantage of First State Vet Supply's Ask the Chicken Doctor program. For just $25, you can have a personal phone consultation with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. The consultation fee is waived if you purchase a product from First State Vet Supply. Visit them online at firststatevetsupply.com. That's firststatevetsupply.com. Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
Okay, welcome back. We are talking today with Richard Frudenberger. He is the publisher and a technical writer for Back Home Magazine, and we're talking about aquaponics and how you can do it in your backyard and at home. So, Richard, there was a question just before we went on break about the use of pond liners or pool liners, if there's anything in them that could be toxic to the fish that would pass on up through their food chain?
That would be a good question. I think that for the suppliers that actually deal in this in the smaller ponds for the decorative ponds and people raising koi and stuff, when they sell those liners, there should be a material data safety sheet for all those products, and they will be able to tell you whether it's a food grade plastic or not. If it wasn't, it doesn't necessarily mean it would be absolutely horrible, but you know, if you don't know, you really don't. You can't assume it's okay just because they don't say anything about it.
Richard, what about swimming pool liners? You know, like you get those big wading pools, or just some of the bigger people pool liners.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing is, there's a difference between swimming in the pool and actually drinking the water from the pool. I mean, I'm sure it's safe to the extent that it needs to be safe for skin contact, but it'd be hard to assume that it's okay to ingest, a fish after it's been in the environment like that for weeks. Again, it's probably nothing in there that's going to leach out and really, really be a problem, but you really don't know. I mean, there could be stuff in there that really wasn't considered a problem, like the plastic bottles. You know, the whole issue with clear plastic drinking water bottles, how they're and baby containers and stuff like that, how they're leaching out some of the
phthalates.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and to some people it's like big deal, and to others it's a real problem. So it's just really a matter of your mindset, and the best thing to do is be a good consumer. You need to, if you find a product you like, you really, before you actually buy it, you would need to call the consumers, the 800 number or get the number of the manufacturer from the salespeople and just specifically ask them if it contains anything, if it's a food grade plastic, or if it might be considered a problem in some environments. Those pools, not the swimming pools, but the ABS black hard rubber, hard plastic pools that they use for the koi fish. I mean, that, nobody would ever expect you to drink water out of that.
Right. I had some friends that used some septic tank, some concrete septic tanks for fish pond. They connected the two together. And what they didn't realize is that the it has to, what do you call it, I guess, age or temper, because the lime was leaching out and affecting the pH of the water, and all their fish were dying. And that eventually stopped, but they had to deal with that at the beginning with the concrete.
Yeah, concrete's probably a pretty good choice because it for the most part, it shouldn't have anything in it that's toxic. Now, I'll say two things about that. You're absolutely correct. Concrete's a very alkaline, high pH material, and it does take a while for it to settle, settle down, and it can be adjusted. You turn off, know what you're doing chemically, and adding a little acid to help balance the pH. But that's, you certainly couldn't do that while the fish were in it. You have to set the water up like as you would in an aquarium before introducing the fish. But it would take some time in the sun and just let the water flush through it to let it dissipate a little bit. And the other thing is that some concrete, depending on where it comes from, contains a fly ash, and fly ash can be sourced from, I mean, there's all sorts of things from possible radon in it to other chemical materials that you really wouldn't want in it there. So, that's always a concern, but it's really, really hard, difficult to determine whether the source of your concrete actually has fly ash in it other than just testing it, which, can be a little costly. So, but that's a good point. The thing, and right on the tail end of that, is that when people introduce water into these tanks, whether they're just tubs or larger livestock tanks, if it is not well water, if it's city water or municipal water, it'll probably have chlorine in it, and it really has to settle for anywhere from 3 days to possibly a week or more before you introduce the fish, because the chlorine will kill the fish as well. So that has that's a big issue that has to be addressed before people just dump their fish in the chlorine water.
Right, that's true with the tropical fish aquariums too. That chlorine has to flash off until you can use it.
Yeah, it takes a couple days to do that.
And
anybody who raises fish in a tank knows that. I mean, you just don't dump put your city water into the tank and put the fish right in there.
Right. There's another question here, Richard. It says, "What is this from FMA Farms?" It says, "Is there a minimum tank size?" And they're wondering if they could use a huge Rubbermaid tote. And such as her husband set up for the hydroponics.
Yeah, I mean, I think about 35 gallons is probably about the minimum, and I could be off a little bit, but certainly no less than that. I mean, I don't know what the gallon, it probably says right on the side of the tote what the gallon size is. I know some of those tall ones. I mean, I've got a couple of those big Rubbermaid ones, and they must be at least a foot and a half tall, and, I don't know if that's, I don't think that's 35 gallons, so I think it's a little small. But possibly a garbage can, like a big trash container, and certainly a galvanized. Now the galvanization again, that may be an issue in some, in a warmer environment, leaching. But assuming it maybe wasn't galvanized, assuming it was just a big wash tub that was, the size of a galvanized tub, that would probably be about as small as I'd want to use for something like this.
Yeah, okay.
And, this gentleman's tank was, like I said, about almost 3 feet in diameter and about a foot and a half, at least a foot and a half, possibly 2 feet deep. So, that's what he was using, and it seemed to be fine for him.
Okay. Well, now here's the question that we sort of posed before the break, and that is, can you combine aquaponics with ducks to meet their sort of water needs? So and they're thinking about building a little pond, as I understand from them in the chat room. So
I think one problem that comes to mind immediately is that if you have the plants suspended above the water, which is how it's done. I mean, they're pretty close to the water, right above the surface of the water. So the plant water can drip right into the container. If you have these salad greens and these other greens and plants and such growing right above the water, if you had waterfowl in the water, in addition to the fish, the waterfowl would be just snapping up, just going up to the plants and eating the leaves. That's one issue. So, that's sort of a practical answer. On the other hand, I vaguely remember, this is all memory, but there was a people may have been familiar with what was called the New Alchemy Institute in Cape Cod.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And it was they did a lot of sustainable and permaculture type agriculture and experimental agriculture in those days, and they did have a aquaponic setup, and they did have waterfowl, and they did have fish. So I don't know how that was addressed. I mean, I would assume you could probably put a netting or just raise the growing portion of your plants up to a point, you know, up well above the level at which the waterfowl could actually get to them, and then just have drain hoses or just have it drip into the water, you know, from a distance of a couple feet, and you could still have your fish. Now, of course, you know, obviously you have to make sure the waterfowl weren't bothering the fish, but other than that, I really don't see why, except you may have a preponderance of waste, but that, again, that just means growing more plants and having a larger, you know, larger container or just a pond. I mean, this mm-hmm. could be done in a pond situation. That's you know how people do it on a larger scale, really.
Yeah. Well, I know there are some greenhouses like the new Alchemy Institute. They combine the greenhouses with the tanks that served as a heat sink, and then of course did the almost gray water treatment with the fish, and then also growing lettuces and that sort of thing. So it can truly be a permaculture stack system and be very productive.
Yeah. And I can imagine if, as long as you managed it and figured out what you needed, or even just did it by the seat of your pants, and you know, put everything in there, and then sort of observe the situation. And if you had to get rid of some ducks, or you know, adjust the number of fish, or scoop the waste out of the water more frequently than you want to, or whatever, you just have to do that till you reach a happy balance, because that's really sort of what it's all about.
Yeah. Well, now when you had Mother Earth, what was it, the village that you had helped create?
You mean the greenhouse? The greenhouse,
yeah.
with the chickens and the soil bed warming and all that.
Well,
that
yes, that was part of the village, wasn't it? The
oh, you mean the village, the eco village? Oh, I see, the whole village. Yeah.
Yeah, the eco village.
Yeah.
So you were doing that there as well, as with the demonstrations for.
Yeah, there was some multi-layered, you know, biocycle stuff going on there. We had a greenhouse. A small greenhouse with a chicken run right in it, and the manure was being used to supplement the soil, and then the warmth of the greenhouse and the birds and the was being used to keep the beds warm, and we were, you know, using the manure for fertilizer, and then using the plant, some of the plants were growing as feed for the chicken. So it was a nice big cycle. Unfortunately, that burned down. They had an accidental fire due to one of the heaters, and that, I mean, it lasted long enough to do to do some experiments, but we never really finished everything because it burned to the ground, and we never actually rebuilt it. So that was sort of a sad ending to that, but it was certainly a good idea.
Yeah. I mean, that was a phenomenal place that you guys were building there. Gosh, I'd forgotten that it had burned down. Sorry about that again.
Oh yeah, no, that was just an accidental thing. But you know, what the bottom line there was, we just never had a chance to finish the testing and experimentation on getting. You know, you have to really keep records and see what the soil temperatures are and see what the growth patterns are and you know, see what the chicken production is and the weights of the birds and how things are progressing. I mean, that all sort of came to a screeching halt, you know, so that's the end of that, and, you know, but I'm sure that somebody else somewhere is doing something very similar to that. I've seen, it's not on the tip of my tongue, but I know people are recreating some of that now, and that's, you know, that's just the next generation. I mean, that's, you know, it's great.
Yes. Yeah. And Richard, I'd just like to refer people to Bill Mollison's book on permaculture. It's a practical guide for a sustainable future. It's become a classic. It's quite a big manual, but it's got so many of these ideas about how you can stack and integrate food systems with animal systems, with the environment, and it literally gets into landscape use and management that is very diversified. So that's a wonderful book. It's a Permaculture, a Practical Guide for a Sustainable Future by Bill Mollison. So I'm sure you've read that cover to cover too.
I mean, Bill Mollison was the granddaddy of of permaculture, and there several of his disciples have gone on and you know, done their own books and done their own research and whatever, and you know, so this builds the, you know, the rootstock from which everything came, but you know, there's a lot of other, there's several other newer books that we you know, that are also more available possibly in some cases, and you know, they're just continuing on what Bill and the group started in Australia, you know, back in the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And,
you know,
and a lot of this stuff did come from Australia and New Zealand. You know, that's I guess really because they sort of had to, you know, had to collect rainwater and had to keep things in a big cycle. And so you'll notice that a lot of the experimentation takes place in those areas in New Zealand and Australia.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, with these changing weather patterns, it seems like it's either too much flooding or not enough water. Well, it'll be interesting. Like last summer, oh my gosh, I wish I had been collecting rainwater off my chicken coop to do the garden, because we had such a bone dry summer. And of course, now we've got more water than we could possibly use. But yes. Here's a question. This is from FMA Farmagans. He says, could a little fish like a tetra, which is just a little tropical fish, could that end up being sucked up and pumped into the aquaponic system? He doesn't want to think of having his fish dying in with the tomato seedlings.
No, you would the pumps have screens on intake screens on them. You can't, you know, they're small enough to, the fish are too large to go up intake screen. There's no, I wouldn't operate a pump without a screen on it. And you can make your own. I mean, if you have a pump that doesn't particularly have a screen on it, you can take a piece of plastic PVC pipe and drill 1/8-inch holes all through it, all around it, and cap it and drill the holes all around it, and then wrap it in a stocking, a nylon stocking or some filter mm-hmm. fabric, and that's, you know, adequate. It doesn't even have to be that fine. Obviously, it's just some kind of a netting that won't allow a fish to go up into the intake pipe. And these are small pumps.
There's a comment in the chat room from Tally Calvert. It says, their little fish gets sucked up in his guppies, end up going down the waterfall all the time. It doesn't seem to bother them. I bet they have a plan of, like, going down the water slide. It's like, come on, let's go get sucked up into that so we can have another ride. Oh, dear. Those guppies, yeah. Okay, so stockings. There's another comment about who has nylon stockings anymore.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you know, I guess anybody who wears pantyhose, or, you know, I was trying to think of something else that would be large enough. Sometimes the citrus fruits come in bags that are small enough to block a fish, you know, certainly a fingerling from going up into the pump. So, you know, like an old orange bag or a lemon bag or something like that may be adequate. You know, something that's not going to deteriorate very quickly. Like it wouldn't be cotton. Most of them would be a plastic kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that just makes common sense. Well, one, of course, I've got a little, in the summer, I hook up a little sort of dog and cat water / waterfall. And I was keep thinking about putting some goldfish in there because mosquitoes do breed, even as small as this is. It's only about, probably two feet across, maybe 3 feet. So, but I kind of feel like that's not much of a life for the goldfish.
But yeah, that could be a
control probably
problem.
Outweighs that. So.
Yeah, yeah. You know, maybe there's some other creatures that maybe just keep some. Toads and frogs around there for the mosquito control. That might be a better choice. Where's your guineas? There's your mosquito control.
Yeah, really. But they don't get the larva out of the water though. They go after the real thing.
Yeah, that's true. They don't want to go to.
And
why,
then the mosquitoes
bother?
Are going after me too.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have guineas now? Do you still have some?
Actually, only one now because they were so aggressive. I actually had more, a lot more males than females, and the males were super aggressive to the roosters, and they also actually were pretty aggressive to the chickens too, for whatever reason. So that just got to be a real hassle. It cut it stressed them out. It cut egg production down. It was a racket all the time. So basically, what I've done is kept the female, and I probably keep my eye out for you know, as you probably know, we can't import out of state birds. So I have to find a source of here and here locally, and then just make sure I pick, you know, just pick the females, and they tend to be less aggressive. Although I don't know, I mean, maybe just a bad aggressive stock, but even the females a little more bossy than I would
yeah,
like.
Yeah, mine were aggressive, and I ended up giving them away. They were just too much. But there's a final comment here from in the chat room, Richard. It says, finally, there's a market for used bridal veils that from failed marriages. You can use for the pump to screen the fish out.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, right. But that's exactly the kind of material I mean. Just the civvy kind of, you know, cheesclothy stuff, you know, that would be just fine. Yeah, there you go. That'd be perfect.
Yeah, starter veils.
Yeah, right.
Let marriage veils become aquaponics filters. What a marketing niche. I love it. Okay. Well, it's time to sign off here. Thank you so much for coming and talking with us about aquaponics and then how we can do that in our own little homesteads and backyards. So we've been speaking with Richard Frudenberger. He is the publisher and technical writer for Back Home Magazine. And you can reach Back Home at 800-992-2546. 800-992-2546, or sign up for a subscription at www.backhomemagazine.com. I'm going to post that on the chat room in here as well. Thank you, Richard, so much. As usual, it's been incredibly enlightening.
Okay, well, thank you, Pat, and thank you, Andy, and we'll talk to you again the second week in May, I guess. This is the next shot I've got at it, right?
That's
absolutely
right.
That is correct. And the second and fourth Thursdays, folks, you can hear even more from Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. And we get so many compliments when he's on. You can continue your education with Back Home Magazine by subscribing. It's very simple to do. backhomemagazine.com. again, go to backhomemagazine.com. you can believe subscribe online. If not, you can give them a call to their 800 number. Give them a call, you'll talk to a real person right there, and they can get you subscribed to that awesome publication. Again, if you like what you hear twice a month here on the show, extend that and go ahead and get the magazine. Again, backhomemagazine.com. And that's going to wrap it up for another show here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Tune in tomorrow. Not sure where we'll be broadcasting from. Maybe Pat's house. It may be at the Augusta Co-op. It may be riding up 75 like we did before. So we hope you can join us tomorrow. Tune in, and Pat, take it away.
Okay, well, Andy Schneider, have a safe trip up here to the Shenandoah Valley. We're all looking forward to having you here in this beautiful, beautiful place that we are. And, of course, thanks to Blog Talk Radio for providing the radio, chat, and the video services. And where would we be without our chat room chicken ears? Great question today, you guys, and thanks for participating and tuning into the show. Blessings to all. We love you all so much, and may the flock be with you evermore. God bless everybody.